PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, my golfing friends, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and returning this week, I believe for his first stint of 2022, considering it's only a couple weeks old, is my buddy James Miles, staff writer on THP. He's a great fella, coached some kids in golf, currently in a little bit of a quarantine situation, which we're not talking about. But other than that, how are you, my friend?
I'm surviving. Release season makes it better. I've been busy and it kind of keeps mind off all the other stuff. So it's been good. How are you, buddy?
There's stupid white stuff on the ground outside and I can't sell my wife on moving south far, far away from it. There was actually a thread that came up on THP the other day that said, if you could have $10,000 to spend on golf stuff, whatever you want it to be, what would it be? And I asked if there could be some sort of like transitional where I can bribe my wife with that $10,000 to move. And I just got laughed at. So I think the answer is no there. But yeah, I'm hanging in, man. Release season is so fun, but it's also challenging because, at least from my perspective, limitations on being able to hit the product, you know, we're all just waiting for a time. And it's also PGA show time of year, which, you know, normally would get us out of Dodge. In this case, obviously, it's not getting anyone with the exception of, I believe, one or two companies out of Dodge. Yeah. Maybe we'll see. Are you enjoying, because I know you do a lot of writing on the releases as they come, are you enjoying seeing that product and getting a deep dive personally on it before anyone else does?
It's one of the more exciting things. Like releases are interesting because you're breaking down all the tech for people, but you don't actually have it in hand yet to hit it or anything else. So I geek out just as much about what's going on inside of clubs as I think most of the readers do. So it's been something I look forward to. The months building up to it kind of get exciting because it's usually slow season, but now it all hits within like 3 weeks. I mean, last week was nuts, this week's nuts, and the following week's going to be nuts. So it's good though.
So on THP, we have a thread called the equipment pondering thread. And when release season starts to hit, your activity in that thread goes up to like a million. I've seen you post a lot. You want to hit pretty much every driver that's being made right now. What are you most excited about? Just give me maybe a list of two or three products.
This year with Rogue, Callaway's got my interest again. I think a lot of it's looks that kind of has drawn me back in. I know the color choices are polarizing for some people, but the satin crown kind of does it for me. Cobra, because we have been hearing about this line for like whispers of it for what, 3 years, something like that, going back, that this is the one that Yagley and Jose out there have been kind of secretly geeking and giggling about every time the mention of the future comes up. So that's exciting. And Mizuno has my full attention right now as far as new releases in Metalwoods, which, when was the last time that you could say Mizuno was demanding attention in the Metalwood category? Last year was a big start for them, and it looks like they're going to build on it this year.
Yeah, 220 looks great. I'm excited to see how that improves, because we both, I think, had at least one, if not a couple, iterations of their driver in the bag last year. I for one loved Mizuno back and they were making blue heads. Obviously blue is the color for anyone, but it seemed like it was a fairly niche product that hit, you know, a smaller collection of golfers, whereas the current lineup, I believe there are three inline heads right now. They definitely fit that the realm, the space of drivers a little bit better, or a lot better depending on how you look at it. Are you seeing any sort of increased activity on that, even locally for you?
I've actually seen a few Mizunos out in the wild this year, which is really cool. We have a few reps in the area, not nearly as much. The Mizuno reps aren't as active around here usually, and everybody kind of flocks to irons. But it's kind of like you mentioned, like the blue to me was cool, but it was just their way of, maybe if we make it blue, people will be interested. And now it's kind of shifted back to, it doesn't need to be blue because it's good. And that's not to say the other drivers weren't good, but Mizuno has admitted that they were lacking in some areas, ball speed being one of them. It's kind of like the Titleist thing. Titleist admitted they were lacking in ball speed. And what did they do? They went out and they addressed it. And Mizuno's done the same thing. So now it's more of, yeah, we're an iron company, but look what else we can do, and we can do it well. So I'm really curious to see what 2022 does for them as far as marketplace goes.
So every year we like to joke around about, this is the year of the X insert product here. Do you think that driver's still it? Do you think that irons are playing a bigger role now? Where are you right now mentally? And I want to ask you twofold. Number one, where are you personally? Because every year has a bigger impact on our own personal bags. But then where do you think the collective perspective is here?
I think it's still driver. And I think before it was always because it was the year of the driver, because you would end up with two or three that were really good. And now I think it's the case that we're going to have like five or six that are really good. I may not like some of the marketing of some of them.
Yeah, and I was going to say a couple are wild too, regardless of their boost in performance. I mean, just the concepts that are out there right now.
Yeah, we're seeing some outside the box stuff, which is always good, especially when it still performs. And by all intents and purposes, everything out there right now still performs. I mean, I've seen a couple of my kids hit a few of the new drivers, and it's done what it's supposed to do, which is all you can ask for. So I think now the story is more the breadth of the driver segment, and that's why it kind of feels like the year of the driver. Irons are an interesting one because this year we've got some. They're not all coming at one time, I think is the best way to put that. Like usually the beginning of the year, like everybody, here's your race to irons. We either saw them at the end of last year or right in the beginning of this year. Now we're not going to see some of the irons for some of the companies till like April. So it's an interesting decision. I think that kind of weighs in my head as far as what it's the year of for me.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting with how challenging stock and supply and demand's been. Obviously, demand couldn't be much higher for golf because of the climate we're in. But naturally, with that comes the challenges of actually acquiring the goods to sell. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it hits hardest on golf balls, which I personally, from my perspective, it's the year of the golf ball. I have been cemented in a single ball for a very long time. And yeah, I think it'd be foolish not to at least experiment. You know, that there are a lot of companies bringing a lot of great products out. So Title certainly has my attention. Callaway, brand new ball, has my attention. Obviously, we had Verscon talking about it a little bit. But then you know that Bridgestone has prototypes in the wild. You know that Srixon's building up the lineup with Diamond now. Like, it's crazy how many competitive balls are out there. If you can find them, you know. But then you start to wonder, like, what are these DTC brands doing? Like, you get your Snell, your Vice, your good examples there, that there's so many options to choose from. It's all about finding that realm that works for you. But I also found another interesting thing, James. Mm-hmm. Q-Star Tour, which I think is a really weird place in the spectrum, because it's super cheap for a urethane ball, number one. But we just did a video this week showing that for at least my swing, it's competitive from a mid iron with every ball in the lineup, which is wild to me. And it puts that lower spin profile that I like. Not to mention, it's got divide if you really want to rattle the brains of your more stubborn or stuffy playing partners.
Traditionalist.
Yeah, stuffy, yeah, whatever. Traditionalist, the pleaders. It's crazy to me when you really sit back and look at how many good options there are and how diverse these options are becoming from each golfer's swing. Now, you gave me grief about the other day. I said, Chrome Soft for life, and you said, and I joked around about CSX, the Chrome Soft X, being it's not for me. You guys enjoy that ball. I'm glad it's there for you. And you said, whoa, watch your mouth. So you're obviously in a little bit of a different camp. I'm assuming you're more of like the when you get into Bridgestone, you're like the XS camp, somewhere around then.
Yeah, I'm a big maximize spin in the greens guy. And that's just because of how I play and how I've especially the last several years. Prior to it was always the case of trying to help get the ball up. As you've seen in the last year or so, COVID hit and all of a sudden I hit the ball high. It's the dangest thing. I didn't change anything in my swing. I just, we had a massive worldwide issue and all of a sudden I can hit driver high and everything else. So it's your fault. Yeah, it's all me. I sent the world into retrograde or something. Yeah. I don't know. But so for me, my needs and demands have changed in that. And it kind of comes into, I play more aggressive than I ever have. And I want something that I know I can throw in at stuff, even when I probably shouldn't. So I tend to flock to the CSX, to the XS, to the Z-Star XVs, those kind of golf balls, which it's interesting you bring up the DTCs, because maybe it's just me, but I feel like the major OEMs have kind of galvanized their golf ball lineups. I mean, Titleist has, Strixon has, Callaway has. Bridgestone kind of has kept on doing what they've been doing, but now everybody's doing it. They have a ball for every segment. And to me, it kind of feels like they're pushing the DTCs out more so. Whereas a couple years ago, all the talk was of Snell and of Vice and everything else. And you bring up the Q-Star Tour. I mean, that ball at that price point, that goes toe to toe with anything out there. DTC, in my opinion. I mean, I'm going to put over half of my golf team into the Q-Star Tour, because it fits so many different players so well, and the price is right.
You got to be super curious about Z-Star Diamond. Pardon me, Z-Star Diamond. Yeah, it's a recent release. Obviously, finds that middle line spectrum between Z-Star and XV. You put that in play at all, or are you curious about it?
I haven't got them in hand yet. It's on my list of them. Once we kind of get through this little bit of funk, I want to get them out and try, because if it'll blend the Z off, like what I like off the Z off the tee and what I like of the XV into the greens, then yeah, it's that best of both worlds things, which is what for Callaway. I mean, that's what the CSX did for me. I don't know. It's fun. And some people roll their eyes whenever I say it, and it's the truth. Like, nobody's making bad clubs right now. There's not really any major company. Well, okay, I won't say it, but there's one that hasn't changed that I don't think makes as good of a product as everybody else. But everybody else is making a great product.
Do you think, as we see the world change, that more folks are going to get into the golf ball? You got to wonder, right? Because there are some big boys out there who are not playing golf ball game at all, where the value there of being in that and how often people purchase, you got to wonder, right?
It's all about who's going to be the best at showing people? Because otherwise, I mean, your course, I imagine, is a lot similar to where I play. Like, most of the guys are just going to go in and they're going to buy a box of Pro Vs or Pro V1Xs, because they still, in their head, think that's the only ball. Now, Callaway's taken a massive dent in that, more than I think most people would believe, and more than I think Titleist would want people to realize. But it's still hard. I mean, we haven't seen a movement to get people fit into the correct ball in a great way since Bridgestone did it, and then they abandoned it. So who's going to do that? Because it should be. It should be the year of the golf ball. The golf ball, we've seen it in our testing and everything we've done, and the videos that you shot and the hard articles that I've written. Like, a golf ball changes everything, more so than people want to believe or maybe realize.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of crazy watching the progression of Callaway through the industry. Like, obviously they came out with an incredible tagline at an unbelievable price for urethane, calling it the ball that changes the ball. But before that, you had the ball that fit them all, in my perspective, which was Bridgestone. And you could see Bridgestone slowly creeping, especially in green grass, at least at my course. And now, right, wrong, or indifferent, Callaway and Titleist are dominant in there. If you want to grab a dozen golf balls while you're paying, you have both of those in front of you, and Bridgestone's kind of off to the side. Now, I'm glad they still sell them, but it doesn't have that same level of impact, which, you know, I've been a big fan of Bridgestone balls for a long time, so I've been a little bit disappointed at that progression. But it's hard to ignore when a company like Callaway comes out and says, well, we know that a lot of golfers need a ball that compresses more, so we provide you with Chrome Soft. And then 3 years later, 4 years, 5 years later, magically, they have a ball that competes with Pro V1X, that competes with, you know, the firmer balls out there, Tour B. They just kind of slid that in there. And now it impacted you more than it did me, because I'm like, give me Chrome Soft all day. I spin the ball way too much. So it's been funny to watch that transition, but it also makes you wonder, how wide open is this door for the company that's willing to look 5 years down the line and say, let's do it right with a ball that performs, because obviously we can get our hands on that and continue to develop from there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost become an arms race in golf balls, right? I did the Chrome Soft, the new line release a week or so ago. And I mean, the big story there is they're using 3D x-ray machines now, like to measure every single layer of the golf ball, not just the core, and make sure everything is on point. And that to me is like what you're talking about. Like, that's forward thinking. It's cool to talk about now, but what is that going to allow them to do in 4 or 5 years? I mean, Titleist has always been the same way. They may keep the same naming mechanisms, but don't fool yourself. The Pro V1 and the Pro V1X have changed a lot. I mean, almost completely at times. And then you add the AVX in now, and they're doing similar things. So it's curious to me to see who is willing to think forward. I mean,
well, let's talk about Titleist for a second, because it's super confusing what they're doing from someone who's not paying attention. And what I mean there is, they have Pro V1 and Pro V1X, and they also have AVX, which is a great three ball spectrum, sure. But now they have Left Dash, they have Pro V1, was it the Left Dot? Like, there's so many things going in there, and twofold. Number one, they're challenging to find, because you have to get them either on the website or being a limited release. Mm-hmm. But then the question is, what does Titleist look like in 4 years? Because they obviously recognize that people want more. And in a different way, they see Chrome Soft, I'm assuming, and recognize that there's a significant difference between Chrome Soft and Chrome Soft X. And this is the first time it's almost reactionary. They're almost testing the market or testing the water and seeing just how interested their users are in variety as opposed to it. And it's another big thing, because they still get to play Pro V. You know, it's not like, oh, I play AVX when my favorite pro plays Pro V. Now they get to play a Pro V that suits their game instead of the pro's game, right?
Well, so to me, like, that's where Callaway has the advantage in a company like that. Callaway coming in can pretty much put out, I mean, they could have this year, if they wanted to, they could have shifted from the Chrome Soft name. There were some rumors out there about that. But everything that they add into it, it's still in a recency of mindset thing. For consumers, it doesn't affect them as much. Whereas I think Titleist, I don't want to say they're hamstrung by it, because let's not lie, Pro V1 is the biggest name in golf ball still. But I think they are kind of hung up on the, we have to use that naming mechanism and we can't stray too far from it. AVX was, remember when AVX dropped? You and I have had the conversation about it. Like, the idea of the ball made sense, but it was like, well, that's a bold move, because you're creating a competitor to your flagship lines. And that's the only time we've seen them do it. Now we're seeing them do Left Dot and everything else, which personally, I think if they would push them as like a boutique release, you know, a limited batch, small batch, whatever else you want to call it release, and really push that hard, I think you gain even more traction and acceptance with it, because you're right. Otherwise people see, oh, there's a new Pro V, how do I get it? And then they can't find it because they don't understand the message quite as well. But it's something I've thought about a lot lately. And I think that is where Callaway has had the biggest advantage of it. When they want to add a ball into the lineup, they can do it pretty much however they want to and not have to go back to, we have to protect our name, we have to protect our flagship and everything else. Now, Titleist has done a good job at it, but it's starting to feel like a big two-dog fight. And then there's others that are starting to kind of make moves. I mean, Strixon's made moves, right? TaylorMade, I don't know what they're doing with the golf ball. But then Bridgestone is kind of left out in the cold. The next 2 years are going to be really interesting in the golf ball segment to me. That's where we're going to see some things shake out hard.
Let's talk about just the basic identifiers, because with Chrome Soft, I've never been afraid to say this is a ball that suits every player, and you just have to find the right one that works for you. And they've never said, they've never indicated that if you're of this skill or this speed or this, I guess you could say even gender, it doesn't really matter. Just find the one that works for you and get fit is the big story. Whereas Bridgestone, they came in and they kind of had to do it at the time. They had to say, we want you in a tour ball, but we understand that not everyone swings like a tour player does. They were the first ones to really sell that messaging. Do you feel like that's a little bit tired now with the variety in golf? With when you have the spectrums you have from other companies, is it necessary to make those claims now? Or are golfers at this point educated enough to know that if they don't swing it as hard or they spin it too much, the ball that compresses more is actually quite beneficial for them? And if not, James, why are the other companies not going along with that as well?
I think when Bridgestone came onto the scene with that, it was what was necessary. It was needed. The segment was screaming for it. It was the easiest to convey message, and it struck a chord and made a ton of sense, particularly because none of the other golf ball companies had lineups that were as broad and encompassing. So for Bridgestone, they kind of hit gold with that. Like, I remember when they did that, and it was brilliant because mm-hmm. that was the main message. And compared to competitors, then at that point, it was either Pro V1, Pro V1X. I mean, whichever iteration Callaway was doing prior to coming to Chrome Soft, Srixon was there, but it wasn't as big of a deal with it. Like, Bridgestone hit gold. And I think that I feel personally, and I love the Bridgestone ball, you know, that's the main golf ball I've used over the last, God, 6-7 years. And it'll have another shot at it this year. But I feel like they're so tied to that message now that they've been passed by, because these other companies coming out and presenting like Chrome Soft X, and then the LS the way that they have, you don't need those designations anymore, in my opinion. You just don't, because the message has become more on fitting, which is where Bridgestone started. But the reality of it is the message now should be, everybody fits into a different golf ball based on their swings, no different than drivers or anything else.
Yeah.
We shouldn't pigeonhole people into a mile per hour thing. I mean, I have kids on my team. We played Bridgestone as a team ball last year, and it took like a week with my better players to get them to understand, hey, this is why I'm putting you in the RX versus the X. But truthfully, like, you were the example that I used for my best kid on all that, because when he saw the numbers, it clicked and it made perfect sense. But if you look at the box, mom and dad or whoever are going to go, well, he swings harder than that. And the same thing happens with golfers with their ego. So I think it was perfect for the time, but I feel like they're stuck in the past and they're afraid to move past that. They're afraid of what's going to happen if we don't have that on the front of the box. Well, don't have it on the front of the box, put it on the back of the box. As a recommendation, change the message, do something different, because times change.
Well, the story needs to be told, right? And you got to wonder from a retailer perspective, what can they do to enhance? Because back in the day, you just put all the urethane tour balls in one place and let people pick whatever the heck they wanted to. From my perspective, especially the smaller companies, maybe not even the huge ones, but doesn't it kind of benefit you to get someone to grab a ball that truly benefits their game? Because they're going to come right back and buy more when they have that experience. So is there a way to support this packaging logic of, you know, maybe we don't put all four of those balls together. Maybe we put Chrome Soft with RX and RXS and, you know, group them together in a way that people can make a decision based on their style of play, not just the grouping of the companies. When you're in the retailer, get online. What's your fitting story? Well, do you spin the ball too much? Take a look at these balls. Maybe these will help you. Do you not spin the ball enough? Take a look at these balls. Do you swing really hard? Take a look at these balls. You know, what are you willing to sacrifice? Is it distance or spin or accuracy or whatever? You know, the ability to fit now for a golf ball, even from a 10,000 mile view is quite easy with how many companies are doing something somewhat similar. Why not present that as a retailer in a way that's so much easier to digest? Are they relying so heavily on what the tour guys are playing and people flocking to it?
I mean, I think it's the case of lowest hanging fruit. The easiest way to go about things is the way that you've always done them, right? And two, let's be honest, a lot of that on, if you put it on the retailer side of things, a lot of that impacts their relationships with the companies and how they're purchasing shelf space and things like that. Yeah, brick and mortar is not as big as it used to be, so the online segment is what it is. But yeah, for some companies, I mean, there's one company in particular who would not want their golf balls to be put next to others in those segments, especially because it might expose them to the fact that they don't really hit those segments.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to call anybody out. So I'm not, I mean, use your imaginations, but that's the thing, because it logistically, like just from a pure answer standpoint, that makes the most sense in the world, because I'm all for educating golfers and giving golfers the best choice, because most of them know just enough to be dangerous and they want better. And if you can get them in better, you're right. Not only are they going to come back and buy more because it's helped their game, but they're going to tell others.
Yeah.
So it's the rock and the hard place thing, right?
There's there's no win there, man. I can't believe how much we've talked about golf balls, but as I said, it's the year of the golf ball for me. So I'm going to obsess over this until I've sorted something out. And obviously, I've got the starting point here, and I'm excited that one of them is actually pretty cheap compared to the others, because that never happens. Usually, it's the most expensive one that I'm most excited about. So that's really exciting. There is something I wanted to talk to you about today, James, and you've talked about it a lot. It's actually impacted the bottom of your bag already for 2022. It was an Adele putting, fit that you went through. I'm not sure where it was. Was it at Club Champion?
No. So I did Club Champion last year because and we'd talked about it. I'd been kind of lost in my putting stroke. Well, it turns out my putting stroke's not my issue. The Sam Lab was really good with that. So then I limped it through the year. I putted well whenever we were out at the O. I'd found something in a mid mallet, and one of my kids went and got fit for an Edel putter. Ryan Hilton, a local guy who's an Edel rep, and his fitting went. You and I have seen it. We've talked about it. THP, we've done videos on the fitting and the lasers and eye dominance and everything that it does. And I thought it was great for my best player to go do, because he always felt like he couldn't see his line. And he came back and his mind was blown. And I knew that was going to be the case. I told him that was going to be the case. But then I decided, you know, I need to do it myself. Like, I can't tell somebody to go do something and have not done it myself. So I kind of went into it like, well, let's see what this is. And it kind of broke me. I'm not a bad putter at all, but left eye dominant right-handed putter, I always felt like I couldn't see my line, and boy, this was eye-opening, to say the least.
So if anyone's been on THB TV, you got to see myself and Mr. Koski from Adele go through a small component of their fitting cart. It's a really cool system. There's a lot of stuff involved in it. But it supports the idea of getting you into a head that works for your eye set, and a complementing alignment aid that supports that, a shaft or a neck option that presents the head to the ball in a right way to get the ball rolling properly, and then weighting throughout the head, both in the base of the grip and then partway down. As well as the putter head itself to match your stroke, so you're not really fighting. And that's one thing I noticed last year while I was messing around with a couple different putters, is the closer the putter got to suiting my stroke, the less I fought it, and you could feel it, right? Anyone goes to a store, you can feel the club head not doing what you want it to, and you're having to autocorrect. I feel like what you're telling me here, James, is you found a putter or a setup that basically putts with your stroke, not against your stroke. Is that fair?
100%. And it's, the cool thing about it is it's science based. So like science teacher, history teacher in me is, and just the job I do with THP and golf equipment, it kind of lets me geek out. And Ryan did a great job of explaining it all. And, you know, I came in with a mid mallet that I'd been using most of the year with flow neck on it. So 30 degrees toe hang somewhere in there. And the Sam Lab kind of spit that out for me that would be most beneficial. The thing is, it doesn't do alignment or anything. So based on that being left eye dominant, one of the first things I was introduced to is, as you move to a blade shape for a left eye dominant guy, it's going to move your alignment left. And we started off with my putter, and they use lasers, laser beams, sharks with lasers. but okay. And I was 23 inches right of target from 12 feet. It was 10 to 12 feet. I was like 23 inches right of target with my putter that I had been using for over 200 rounds of golf in the year.
Yeah.
And that's only that's a minuscule amount as far as degrees alignment. But as soon as we changed the putter shape alone, I moved from about 23 to about 6 inches right of target.
Okay.
That alone. And then from that, we got rid of all the alignment. That put me into about an inch. And then we went with no offset, and that pulled me right on top of it.
So walking through it a little bit, let's say you did put an alignment on the putter, what would be the best situation for you, and what would be the worst?
If I was going to have something top line, would be the best because it would keep my eye towards the front of the putter. Interestingly, it moved me left of target. So I went from too far right to too far left.
Yeah.
Anything in the flange pushed me back right. Mm-hmm. And except for we put two flange lines in and I lined up on target, but I added like 3 degrees of loft. So that was an interesting one. But yeah, it was really cool to see how it changes what your eye sees. Especially because I'm backwards, being left eye dominant with a right-handed putter.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked, maybe not on this podcast, but we've talked on THP a lot about the depths that pros go to get the perfect, most suitable putter for them. I remember being over at TaylorMade a couple years ago during one of the Spider releases, and they had some data on one of their very popular pros at the time. All they were changing was the top of his putter. It would either be a line, a dot all the way back, a line all the way back, two lines, three lines. And there was significant variables to the results, and especially the face angle that was lined up to the ball prior to him hitting. And this is in, you know, a studio that's many, many thousands of dollars to create and, you know, keep up. The idea of having that level of a fit on speed dial for you now with Adele is super interesting. And it's something we're not seeing a ton of just yet. I'm assuming it's coming. I'm assuming as we continue to expand our knowledge as golfers and as people truly get into that more technical space with golf, you will see companies adapt to it and start to say, oh, maybe not every flipping putter we have in our lineup needs to have a flange line on it so Dan can't buy it. But that wasn't salty at all. But, you know, it's great to hear that, number one, you have places like Club Champion that do the full depth and have what they have there to support you with. But also you have a focus product like Adele that can change on the fly, which is probably the coolest part. I remember when Chris and I were doing it, he was using a Sharpie or a dry erase to
vis-a-vis. Yeah. A little overhead marker. Yeah.
Which is pretty rad to think about. I make three putts and then the whole putter changes very quickly. And then once I get into it, and not to mention there are alternate options you can pursue if you maybe think your putter is changing a bit without having to remove the head and fully replace. That's super cool as well. Remind me again who was doing that.
Ryan Hilton is one of their reps from the region. So
okay,
he's been around in the game and around the game for a long time, and it was cool to sit there and talk to him about it all. Especially it kind of brings up to your point about why we're not seeing more of this. And one of the conversations that I've had since then, and then you and I talked about it a little bit, but like the issue with it is if you fit somebody extremely well for a putter that fits everything about their game, are they going to buy another putter from you?
That's a
no,
good
no,
point.
But it is it right. Because, and there's another part to it for me. I think I don't want it to come off the wrong way. I think the better the player, the more important a putter fitting is for them.
Yeah.
Because the argument that we always get is, well, I can putt well with anything. I've told you I could putt with a brick on a stick and I'll get by and I'll do okay. But there's a level that you get to that the little things matter even more. Like you or I can get any of the new releases from anybody else and go out and take it on the green and putt decent with it. Right. It's that gap and difference from it all. So I think that's the tough thing with putters, especially for if you're talking about a company that puts out 15 putters a year, do they really want to really come in and push super fitting really hard, knowing they may not sell another one to that same person?
That's interesting, because word of mouth is a pretty heavy, heavy thing. And you know, putters aren't exactly cheap. Nothing in golf is anymore, so whatever. But you know, the benefit is, as you build more lineups or build more lines, you have a chance of creating a repeat customer, which maybe it's not like, maybe it's not, you know, I'm going to go buy another putter next year, but in 2 years, when you maybe release a different finish or change the insert a little bit or change the milling, then I'm like, 100%, this is the putter I go to. I'm not putting another putter in my bag because I know how well this last one performed. Reach back out to your guy, confirm the specs, and you continue on with it. Not to mention, you tell your 20 closest friends you're a fool if you don't go do this because it's dropped 4 strokes off my game. Mm-hmm. But it all comes back to that. If you have a good fitter and you have a good fitting concept, it benefits them a lot to get it right. And it sounds like you got it right.
I think so. I mean, I'm gonna commit to play the same putter all year outside of reviews, right? Because I love my reviews and everything else. But it was eye opening in that we fit for all those things, and then we fit for weight. He noticed my right hand was too much in it, so we put 30 grams 5 inches down the putter shaft, something I would have never thought of, and it immediately took my right hand out of the putting stroke. And then
you take
my
right hand out of a driver swing, and I'm going to be good at golf again, James.
Well, maybe we can create something,
put some weight in there. Maybe hit me in the head with the 30 grams. I don't know.
But I mean, it's stuff like that. So it's eye opening, and that's the best part about golf to me, man, is whenever you find something that just the science stares at you and you know it's there, and they're doing some cool things. I mean, you've been deep in the SMS wedges too. Edel's doing some cool stuff as far as all that goes.
Yeah, Edel is doing some things, and things I had no idea about. I actually just put you onto your 2022 golf bag, which I'm brutally mad that I didn't see prior to making my purchase.
That bag is awesome.
Gorgeous, gorgeous Edel bag, which checks every box I probably would have been looking to check off while pursuing. Instead, I went super spicy this year. Still not sold on it, but I wanted to have a little fun. So that's working out pretty good for you. You like that bag?
Definitely. I think it's going to be a good one for me, and it's fun to carry too. I got it all loaded up last night and kind of carried it around in the cold just to see. And it's good stuff. Like I just like quality, fun stuff. And that's this. I like your spicy bag too, though. It'll be a good one for you.
Yeah. I already got it on good authority from a couple of my playing buddies that they're upset about it, which is everything I could ask for.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
My dad likes it, and Cal picked it, my son. So that's all that really matters. I do have one final question for you, James, and this has come up a little bit just casually. And I feel like it happens too much, and I don't really understand it, but I want to kind of walk through a little bit. Do you think there's a direct correlation in golf between skill and arrogance?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you coach kids mm-hmm. who are kind of getting into their own realities as human beings. Do you see that correlation from even them? Or do you think this is a construction that's built into a golfer through years of either making putts or hitting an OB off the tee?
I mean, it's the nature and nurture thing, right? But I mean, typically, yes. The more people get into our age range, I see it more. I see it a lot in elite high school golfers. You're going to see way more that are extremely confident in what they do, which they should be, but it bleeds over in ways that sometimes I think youth doesn't understand the way it impacts those around them. I think that's the best way to put it. And then it becomes a thing, and you may get to a point of some people. We have some at our course who I really enjoy as friends after the round, whenever we're sitting around, but like in the moment, it's a lot, because there's no realization. You can be a really good golfer and still be a humble human being. But within golf, for some reason, there's something that just like it clicks in people where the humble part gets a little hard sometimes.
Yeah. I don't really fully grasp it, I guess is the best thing I can say. I don't, I've always found golf to be so humbling that no matter how good it gets, I feel like I'd be a fool to oversell my confidence, because I know the following day it's like a house of cards, right? What is good today could be the worst thing ever tomorrow. I feel like that's the best part about golf, is it's such a humbling sport that you have no choice but to take everything with complete honesty and fairness and not aggression or just being impolite. I mean, am I totally off base there?
No, I think, I mean, the interesting thing is that as I sit here and I'm kind of dwelling on it and thinking about it, like there's a lot of defensiveness in golf. I think that might be the best way to put it. Like typically, you know, the better players who've had to work and do the things they have to get to where they are defensive about their skill. And it is a skill. At the same time, golf is so tradition-based, people get defensive about tradition. And it breeds into this aura around you of, this is the way things are. I'm doing it the way that things should be done, and you're not, so shame on you. And that sucks. I mean, I'm the total opposite. You've been on the course with me. Like, I should probably take my golf game more seriously than I do, but I'd rather have a good time. And and it's golf is an interesting conundrum. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think pride probably has a fair bit to do with it. I get a little bit more aggressive, I guess you could say. I mean, obviously my swing's been in the spotlight a little bit with what we do on THP TV, and I don't take criticism terribly well because it's a combination of frustration and just acceptance.
Vulnerability.
But it's kind of like, oh yeah, you've got a chicken wing, and my chicken wing 7-iron just went, you know, 200 yards. Do I be rude? Do I be like, you know, I should get lessons? Do I find out how, you know, what their gin is? Like, there's so many ways that you can kind of wrap your head around it. But it's funny how golf elevates that. And especially when you're under attack, you're forced to make these big decisions on how you react to it. I've always been of the belief that you can have fun with anyone on a golf course as long as they're not what we call Richard, right?
So, yep, that's right.
You know, I hope that anyone out there with this conversation bouncing around their head falls into the be fair and be kind spectrum of, you know, just have fun, man. Like, this is, you got three kids at home. I got a kid at home right now. Everyone's sick. It's like, if we were on a golf course right now, how happy would we be? You know,
ecstatic. Yeah.
You know, so I've always kind of looked at it that way. Is we could be doing far worse than this, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I doubt that was terribly enlightening, but I hope at least gets people thinking about it a little bit. James, I got to know, man. Do you have any questions for me today?
Oh. Are you going to even carry a driver this year?
Yeah. I'm fairway free. Fairway free.
Fairway free. That's a shame.
So far as I know. Ugh. But, I mean, I have a 15-degree hybrid in the bag.
This is true. Fairway. This is very true.
And then I go into a gauntlet of Mizuno awesomeness from there. So, well, yeah, I don't know.
But, like, what is there anything out there in the driver segment that's catching your eye right now? Be it a technology, be it a story, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, I hit Rogue ST last weekend and hit a couple of them straight. So, oh my God. And this is the humble part of golf, where driver used to be my best asset.
It will be again.
And it will be again. Yeah. I think, I've got a big commit this year, James, to the range. So, you know, it's hard to make changes and big changes to a swing, especially when it's sort of homegrown. When you're on a golf course and you only get to try once every 20
minutes
or so.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, the driver's going to come back. And I think Callaway gets the nod early because it's what I've hit. But I'm definitely excited. I have managed to avoid hitting Srixon drivers for an entire year, I think because I was so ashamed last year. So I'm excited to actually go back and hit like ZX5, ZX7, and experience a new Mizuno. Obviously, I'm fascinated with TaylorMade. who knows what it looks like, but I'm sure my course will have the demos. And then, you know, Cobra, man, you can't pass that up. I was obsessive of F9, and I've heard this is the closest to it. So yeah.
F9 and LTD had a baby. It's what a lot of the word is, and that's not a bad thing, right?
I remember writing the review for LTD on the website and the spaceport, and just how rattled the old guys up golf with were when I hit this unbelievable sounding driver that had a giant hole in it. You know, that thing was awesome. So yeah, I'm super into that.
Well, good stuff, man.
Yeah. Anything else for me, buddy?
No, dude, nothing. I'm thankful for you having me on again.
I love it. We'll have you on again, buddy. We need a round count the next time, because it's probably pretty low right now, so don't even say it. And we can talk shoes again, because we're now shoe twins. I've got some Pro Adapts,
yes,
Spectras that will also rattle the cage of a number of my playing partners. So
yes, I love it.
This is the year of the golf ball, the refound or newly found cultivated driver swing. And rattled partners.
Spiciness.
All right, my friend, thank you so much. I hope everyone enjoyed this conversation about, I guess, golf balls and golf clubs and Adele. Shout out to them. We'll be back next week talking about the rest of golf, because there's plenty we haven't talked about yet. I'm surprised we didn't. So if you do play golf this weekend, have a great time. Don't get too excited about the good ones, because the bad ones are coming too. James, we'll see you, buddy.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.